July 1st, 2015, adult marijuana prohibition came to an end in Oregon. Immediately, over 400,000 adults who consume cannabis responsibly were no longer criminals. This is what freedom sounds like. Brought to you by Portland Normal.
And marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, July 2nd, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. We're coming to you live from Rolla J Studios in beautiful legal Potland, Oregon, and we're so happy to be legal in Potland, Oregon. Thanks to everyone listening on the podcast as well on iTunes or Stitcher. We appreciate our listeners both live and, well, not dead, I guess. Later, live and later. There we go. Hey, we got a great show coming up today. Our regular scheduled program guest, Cops Say Legalize Drugs. You know, every other Thursday, we talk to a member of law enforcement against prohibition, cops, prosecutors, and others, even prison guards sometimes, who've come to recognize that the war on drugs is a war on us, and they want to end not just marijuana prohibition, but the prohibition of all drugs. Joining us today, we'll be speaking to a new speaker from law enforcement against prohibition. Lori Chasey is on the program. We've also got a little bit of drug war data mining to take a look at, because Oregon legalization has meant a huge sales day in Vancouver, Washington. They're posting record sales and hiring extra staff to come in. We'll tell you all about that in drug war data mining. Also coming up on the show today, behind the headlines. Wow, an amazing headline I got about a couple that was found high on marijuana at a Burger King, had their kids taken away from them, had charges filed, etc. But there was something that was left out of the story, almost left out of the story. We'll tell you about that in Behind the Headlines. And in the Radical Rant today, I have a message to my friends in Idaho. I came across some news from the Gem State about, the world is coming to an end because nearby Oregon has joined Washington and legalized adult recreational marijuana possession and, in Oregon, cultivation. We'll tell you what they're talking about in Idaho, my home state, and I'll give them some words of wisdom if they happen to be listening. And, of course, everything starts off with the 420 Radio News. We've got a lot of stuff in the headlines today, including a warning about newly legal weed smoking in Oregon, where you should and should not be packing any newly legal weed. We've also got a story about energy consumption in Colorado because of all the newly legal indoor growing, and a campaign to get indoor marijuana lounges, public lounges for us cannabis consumers in the city of Denver. We've got some trouble up in Alaska, including at a business that I was happy to patronize while I was patronize, whatever it is, while I was up in Alaska. Up in Anchorage. We'll tell you about that. A great bit of hemp news from Kentucky and more on trying to fix the CBD bill in North Carolina. Plus, in hour two, we'll go into Toker Talk Radio. There might be all sorts of surprises going on in Toker Talk Radio. Stay tuned for that coming up in hour two. Also, got some new stickers. I'll show those on the Ustream webcam if anyone's looking in hour two. I'll show that for you. We've got a regular Portland Normal sticker and Keep Portland Normal. Good stuff there. We're back with the news right after this. Thanks for your support. We are Independent Marijuana Media, 420radio.org, and the Russ Belville Show.
to the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with our Shoutcast stream for all internet-enabled media players. Go to rad-r.us/420shout or just click the Shoutcast icon below the live radio feed at 420radio.org.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Oh man, I really dig this tune. You should really check out this groove.
Cool. Groovy.
Hey, check out more deep cuts like this on my show, Big Daddy Fink's Funky Roller Rink, every Thursday night on 420 Radio.
Funky Roller Rink.
Four20 Radio is brought to you by Sacred Serum, who is focused on creating elegant and sophisticated cannabis solutions through its line of dispensers and vaporizers that come preloaded with the world's finest cannabis concentrate. Sacred Serum's concentrate is made on pharmaceutical-grade supercritical CO2 extraction machines that use absolutely no butane or other toxic chemicals. The Vesica, the company's innovative new way to dab and frost, is now available in dispensaries across California. Sacred Serum. Elegance and sophistication concentrated.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Thursday, July 2nd, 2015. Oregonians who plan to smoke, cultivate, or carry cannabis under the state's new recreational marijuana law should make sure they do it in the roughly 47% of Oregon where it's strictly legal. 53% of the state is managed by such government entities as the U.S. Forest Service, the U.S. Bureau of Land Management, and National Park Service, where federal laws list marijuana in the same category as heroin, LSD, and ecstasy. Possession of small amounts of marijuana anywhere in America remains a federal misdemeanor that carries fines and the possibility of jail time, but federal authorities aren't exactly setting up roadblocks to catch people with that baggie of weed. Federal lands also include U.S. government buildings, U.S. Postal Service offices, federally owned property such as downtown Portland's Terry Shrunk Plaza, or the federal prison complex in Sheridan. Surging electricity consumption by Colorado's booming marijuana industry is sabotaging Denver's push to use less energy, just as the White House perfects a clean power plan to cut carbon pollution. Citywide electricity use has been rising at the rate of 1.2% a year, and 45% of that increase comes from marijuana growing facilities, Denver officials said Wednesday. Denver has a goal of capping energy use at 2012 levels. Electricity is a big part of that. The latest Xcel Energy data show cannabis grow facilities statewide, the bulk of which are in Denver, used as much as 200 million kilowatt hours of electricity in 2014, utility officials said. City officials said 354 grow facilities in Denver used about 121 million kilowatts in 2013, up from 86 million kilowatts at 351 facilities in 2012. Denver officials currently aren't considering energy efficiency rules for the industry. Marijuana growing facilities in 2013 used 1.85% of the total electricity consumed in Denver. The same pro-pot advocates who brought legalized recreational marijuana to Colorado launched Thursday a ballot campaign to allow adult marijuana bars in Denver. Mason Tvert and Brian Vicente, who led the successful 2012 statewide initiative campaign for Amendment 64, announced they have formed the Campaign for Limited Social Use to, quote, allow the use but not sale of marijuana at commercial establishments in areas restricted to individuals 21 or older, end quote. The measure, which would apply only to the city of Denver, needs 4,726 valid signatures to qualify for the November 2015 ballot. Colorado, the first state in the nation to create a regulated licensed marijuana market, allows the sale, cultivation, and use of recreational pot by adults 21 and over, but forbids pot smoking openly and publicly, which includes consumption in commercial establishments. Such establishments would also be required to comply with the Colorado Indoor Clean Air Act, said the release. Alaska state regulators have named six marijuana businesses it says are operating illegally. In cease and desist letters signed this month by Alaska Alcoholic Beverage Control Board Chair Cynthia Franklin, officials threatened enforcement action against owners of the businesses. The matter, which highlights the boundaries of newly legalized marijuana in Alaska, will be discussed Thursday in Fairbanks by the board. Three Anchorage-based businesses, Absolute Chronic Delivery Company, Potluck Events, and reporter-turned-pot supporter Charlo Green's Alaska Cannabis Club, received the warnings. Wasilla-based Discreet Deliveries and Northern Heights LLC were also sent letters, as was Green Rush Events in Kenai. According to the letters, Absolutely Chronic and Discreet Deliveries provide door-to-door pot sales. The other businesses operate as marijuana clubs, where people can use pot they either bring themselves or receive for free after paying a membership fee. Using money from a settlement with cigarette makers, Kentucky has invested in hemp. The state board that manages the settlement funds has approved $500,000 in grants and loans to a Winchester company that plans to process hemp seed grown in Kentucky into hulled hearts, protein powders, and other legal commercial products. North Carolina's new CBD oil bill, designed to fix problems in the current CBD-only law, unanimously passed the Senate with amendments. It'll now return to the House for another vote. The bill was amended to say the oil must have less than 0.9% of THC, an increase in the original amount, doesn't say where you're supposed to get it, but does allow you to get the medicine from another jurisdiction. This has been your 420 Radio News for Thursday, July 2nd, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the TuneIn Radio app for all mobile platforms. Go to rad-r.us/420TuneIn or just click the TuneIn Radio icon below the live radio feed on 420radio.org. Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers.
Despite strong public support for medical cannabis, decriminalization, and legalization in Georgia, the state spends $121 million every year to arrest, prosecute, and imprison Georgians for simple possession. Each year, the state of Georgia spends less on driver services, agriculture, and forestry combined. What else can $121 million a year do in Georgia? With that much money, the state could hire and keep 3,000 more teachers, improve roads and bridges, provide tax relief for small businesses, repair aging sewage systems, or lower taxes. But right now, that's millions of dollars of your tax money wasted on failed enforcement. Tell your representative you're tired of wasteful spending and ask them to end cannabis prohibition. Join the conversation at www.peachtreenormal.org. Peachtree Normal is a proud affiliate of Normal, the national organization for the reform of marijuana laws.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National, Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
Today in Behind the Headlines, we get police. Couple found high on marijuana with baby at Burger King. Okay, this is coming from Fox59.com in Indianapolis, and that's like, all right, people were high on marijuana with a baby at the Burger. It's illegal to be high and have a kid now. And the mugshot of Melanie Jane Smith and Merle Tyler Jr. Melanie is, she's out, man. Her eyes are almost completely closed. She looks stoned as hell. Merle, his eyes are a little red. But this is in Henry County, Indiana. A couple was arrested after they allegedly found high on marijuana at a Burger King with a five-month-old baby. Again, what's the problem? They're being arrested for being high and having a child? So Melanie, she's 35. She's charged with neglect of a dependent, obstruction of justice, possession of paraphernalia, and possession of marijuana. Okay, neglect of a dependent because she was high? What, we can't take care of our kids now? Is that what it is? Merle Tyler Jr. was also charged with neglect of a dependent. So now he's got a child charge on him. They've pleaded not guilty to all these charges. Now, the probable cause affidavit says on June 25th, officers were dispatched to the Burger King in Henry County on a report of someone causing problems with other customers. Okay, so now, all right, maybe they were being belligerent, got a little attention. Police arrived. They found Tyler in the backseat of a Chevy pickup with a small child. Another man, William, age 40, was in the driver's seat. Police spoke with Tyler, and it appeared that he did not know where he was at or what he was doing. He was also having trouble talking or sitting up. Now, I'm thinking, like, shit, what these guys do? Like, eat a bunch of edibles? Are they, like, way too high? What the hell's going on? At this point in time, Smith exited the Burger King. That's the woman, Melanie. She exited the Burger King and walked to the passenger seat of the pickup. Smith told officers she was going to be sick. She ran back inside the building. A female officer followed, observed her trying to flush marijuana down the toilet. The officer collected water from the toilet and three chunks of marijuana. Good job, officer. So the woman, Melanie, returns to the truck and also had difficulty speaking and standing up. And I'm like, okay, so we're how many paragraphs into this story? We're three-fourths of the way through this story, however long it is. And I'm like, man, these guys must be smoking some killer diggity dank in Indiana or, you know, using edibles or something. What the hell has gotten them so high on marijuana that they're charged with being neglectful to their kids? I don't know any marijuana that makes parents that high. I mean, what the hell's going on? Well, the officer spoke with the man who was in the other man who was in the pickup, and he told police that he smoked marijuana and had a stash in his boot. He also told police that Tyler and Smith, the other two, the man and the woman, had also smoked, and they had taken pain pills, quote, all day, end quote. That's how the media slanders marijuana when it ain't marijuana's fault. They had been taking pain pills, quote, all day, end quote. But what's the headline? Do we remember the headline? Couple found high on marijuana with baby at Burger King. No. Couple found fucked up on prescription pain pills that are legal in this country, who also happen to be pot smokers, found with baby at Burger King. This shows exactly the way Fox News and other media outlets want to continue to slander marijuana consumers. Tanner also told police that the baby was the child of Tyler and Smith and had been throwing up a lot in the past half hour. Medics were called to the scene to check on the baby. Department of Child Services took custody of the baby. Now look, got no problem with that part of the story. If you'd led this story with couple using prescription pain pills all day, then charged with neglect of their child, this is a different story, ain't it?
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
We are thinking of the children. If those people had just been high on pot, they'd just have been another couple with a baby going to get some munchies at the Burger King. It's the prescription pills that were the subject of that story. Can't lead with that, though. Prescription pill makers buy a lot of ads on Fox.
420 Radio is 24-hour marijuana legalization radio. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Hey, I'm Herb Thrasher, host of Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, live every Friday night at 8 Pacific. Tune in for 2 hours of metal marijuana mayhem featuring exclusive interviews with the latest bands, highlights of live shows, and the latest in marijuana news. It's the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, Friday nights at 8 p.m. at 420 Radio, or catch the replay on Saturday nights.
This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today. Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Well, marijuana is legal now in the state of Oregon, and that is welcome news to the cash registers in Vancouver, Washington. There are so many Oregonians now crossing over the river and purchasing marijuana at the legal pot shops in Vancouver. Noel Crombie of the Oregonian has already tweeted about it, reported on greater than normal foot traffic in the Main Street marijuana store in downtown Vancouver, Washington, which is Washington State's number one best-selling pot shop. It outdoes any shop in the state. Seattle, Spokane, doesn't matter. Little Vancouver, Washington, getting all that traffic from the Portlanders coming over I-5, coming across the Columbia River. Now, of course, it's against federal law to cross the border with the marijuana and against the other state's laws to bring it in or take it out. But Washington State Patrol aren't stopping you from leaving with it. Nobody's checking your ID and kicking out just the Oregonians. They can't do that. Oregon State Police, Multnomah County, Portland, Oregon Police, none of them care if you're coming back with it. Nobody cares. They all have to say it's still illegal and you shouldn't do it, but nobody cares. So the Columbian, which is the paper in Vancouver, they're reporting as well on this. New Vansterdam is another one of the stores. It's the number three best-selling pot shop in all of Washington State. Their spokesperson said Monday was the biggest Monday we've ever had. Now, of course, Monday and Tuesday, it wasn't legal yet. Tuesday was our biggest Tuesday. So even just leading up to legalization happening in Oregon, people were headed to Vancouver. Main Street Marijuana, they've added four extra bud tenders for the day to even throughout the rest of the week, and say they're very excited and anticipating big traffic for 4th of July weekend, of course. And the Main Street Marijuana posted its best sales month yet leading up to this historic day, led the state in sales for March through May. June sales figures aren't available yet, but he says the trend should be holding true. Main Street's previous monthly sales record, the amount of marijuana sold in May from Main Street Marijuana, was 1.752 million. Sales for June were higher at $1.76 million worth of sales out of one little store in Vancouver. And it's in a little downtown core. It's a little Subway shop right across the street and, you know, regular old downtown businesses. And you can bet all of them are doing much better business as well. Now, as of Wednesday, July 1st, a new law goes into effect in Washington state. The growers and the processors are no longer charged a 25% excise tax in Washington state. They had a 25% grower, 25% processor, 25% retail tax, and then the state sales and local taxes on top of that. As of Wednesday, that three-level 25% tax changes to a one-level, at the retail, 37% tax. And yes, that is a ridiculous tax level. Over one-third the price of the product is the tax, but still, it's better than 3 times 25. So they're expecting a massive price drop in Washington state. And I can tell you that an ounce of Dirty Girl up there, which is about a 19.5% THC, pretty decent strain, is going for $250. That was with the tax, with the 3 times 25%. So if that's going to go down to 200 or less, the price of marijuana is continuing to crash here. The owner of Main Street Marijuana says it's really a perfect storm. And I'd say in the next 3 months, we're going to see prices come down anywhere from 25 to 50%. That $250 ounce could be $125 in just the next 3 months. Each week, the sales activity continues to pick up. Last week, the market reached a new pinnacle for the entire Washington state. They sold $2.5 million worth of marijuana in a single day. They just recently reached that milestone. The Vansterdam usually does sales days 20,000 to 30,000 a day. This week, the store did $47,000 in Tuesday, $42,000 the day before. Typically 800 customers, 900 to 1,000 on Fridays and Saturdays. And he's saying he's going to be getting 1,000 or more for each of these days. Now, Oregon's pot shops don't open until late 2016, maybe September, October, if we're realistic. So will Vancouver continue to enjoy those kind of sales figures as all these Oregonians cross the border? Probably not. There is a bill that has passed the Senate, and I believe it's getting ready for the governor's signature, that would allow the existing medical marijuana dispensaries in Oregon to sell marijuana tax-free to Oregonians from October, November, and December. So we can have a situation where that flow of money and people that have been crossing the Columbia River reverses and becomes people from Washington state coming to Oregon for the far cheaper marijuana that'll be available here. That'll set up a price war between Portland and Vancouver. That will spread across the two states, and whatever the price happens in the Pacific Northwest, that's going to help the price come down everywhere in America. You're welcome. From the Great Pacific Northwest, legalized marijuana zone here in Cascadia, I'm Radical Russ.
420 Radio, the activist radio station. Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
NARMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Drug war.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome back, everybody, in time for our Cops Say Legalize Drugs segment. And joining us on the phone today, a new speaker to Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. It's Lori Chasey, and I hope I've pronounced that correctly. Hello, Lori.
Hi, Russ.
Pronunciation okay on Chasey?
Well, it's Chassie, but you're close enough.
All right, Lori Chasey. I want to make sure we're all correct here, but thank you for being here. And I note that we're calling you in the Central Time Zone, so where are you located?
I'm just outside of the Chicago city, Chicago, out in the western suburbs, about 50 miles west of the city.
All right, all right. So tell us a little bit about your background in law enforcement and what led you to want to help to legalize drugs.
Well, I have almost 30 years of a multiple-layered career in law enforcement. I've been with both the federal government and with county governments in both DuPage and Kane. My assignments have included narcotics investigation, for asset forfeitures. I've done white-collar crime investigation. And the bulk of my career towards the end, I specialized in crimes against children. And the thing that amazes me is that in each of those roles, I saw firsthand some of the consequences of this war on drugs, and it began to make me question what we were doing and the efficacy of what we were doing in our approach to drug policy in this country.
Well, you know, you mentioned working against crimes against children, and one of the things we hear from people who support prohibition is, what about the children, that somehow legalizing drugs is going to be harmful to the children? How did you see in your experience that prohibition was more harmful to the children?
Well, the areas that I concentrated in were crimes against children, specifically sex abuse and serious physical abuse. And many of the families that we dealt with were left at risk and under-supported because of the absence of a parent or primary breadwinner. And more times than not, they were absent because of incarceration for low-level narcotics convictions. Hmm. And even subsequent to serving any kind of a sentence, you know, once you come out of jail with a drug conviction, it's very hard to put your life back on track. So you have all the concurrent problems with poverty, lack of housing, and these family and children were then often left, you know, to be victimized by friends, acquaintances who knew of their difficult circumstances and took advantage of them. And we saw this time and time again.
You know, I have a friend who had a cultivation conviction, and he's long since served the sentence and the parole and the probation, everything. He's done as he was supposed to do. But now he can't be an assistant coach, a volunteer coach on his kid's baseball team because of a prior felony drug conviction. It's just amazing how these can have repercussions later in life. As you dealt with people and dealt with the criminal justice system, and you saw kind of this revolving door, I've heard many of the officers I've spoken to have talked about it like that. It was just the same people for the same things over and over again. Mm-hmm. How does ending this drug war begin to help some of those people if we don't also provide them a way to clear up their record?
Well, one of the things that, you know, we hope to accomplish, when you talk about the war on drugs, it's important to recognize what it has devolved into, which is, you know, going after low-level users and suppliers in ways, and we've already touched on, you know, the secondary consequences to these folks when they come out. And by disenfranchising these people, we make it more likely rather than less that they will reoffend. If, in fact, I get out of jail and I cannot get a job and I cannot get back into the mainstream, oftentimes, you know, we go back to the self-medicating behaviors that got us into trouble in the first place. Or we look to the sale of drugs as a profit opportunity where we've absolutely been unable to find any other reasonable way to support ourselves. So, in essence, the war has put us in a place where these folks have to reoffend or have to, because we've marginalized them so much from mainstream society, the options are very limited. And, you know, what we're advocating is the regulation and of distribution of these drugs. And for those who suffer from a substance issue or an abuse issue, that puts it back in the hands of the medical community, where it rightfully belongs. And it will be to those folks to craft the solutions, you know, for minimizing the impact of drugs and this revolving door aspect to drug addiction.
Mm. We're speaking with Lori Chassie. She's with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. They've got plenty of great speakers everywhere in the country and a lot of places around the world. Check out their website at leap.cc. And Lori, you know, there's been a lot of stories about policing and I would call over-policing in our country lately. And, you know, in your neck of the woods up there in Chicago, we hear of the secret Chicago black site where the cops were taking people with no access to lawyers for, you know, days at a time. How much of this over-policing, over-militarization of our police do you think owes to our drug war?
Well, certainly I think we can go right back to, you know, the mid-80s and the source of the extreme funding or excessive funding or increase in funding that was given to law enforcement agencies in response to the rise of crack cocaine. And then, you know, you have the Homeland Security piece come into play. And there is so much money to be made and had by illegal drug distribution that in ramping up their enforcement efforts, it also became a tool for law enforcement to acquire assets, you know, through asset forfeiture. And I mentioned I did, you know, some of that work. If you catch a big enough drug dealer, you can and tie their money to their homes, their cars, et cetera. You have access to that as an agency, that money comes back to you. And it became a revolving door for many of the larger departments, you know, in terms of helping to fund their agencies through these large forfeitures. And certainly when there's a lot of money, and I'm not going to point any fingers at one department over another, and understand I'm out in the suburbs, so what we see out here is a little different than sure. In the city of Chicago. But in any organization that large, you know, there are always going to be those few individuals who look at that kind of profit margin and start to engage in behaviors to their own benefit. And that's one of the other unintended consequences of this war on drugs. There's a tremendous profit to be made, and when you have people doing, for instance, undercover narcotic work for extended periods of time, there are those people that are going to become susceptible to the draw of the affluence they see the illegal drug providers acquiring and living, and that is a real a danger to those law enforcement officers who, you know, may not be as strong as some others.
Yes, you bring up the asset forfeiture, and you know that's shocking that how much money and assets are taken from citizens who don't even have to be charged or proven guilty of any crime in many instances. And the law enforcement agencies, they're figuring that into their budgets. That's part of their forecast. So they anticipate going and getting that much. And then we have the private prison industries that sign contracts with these states that say you got to keep the beds 90% full. How are we going to reverse the economics of that when these budgets now are depending on this source of money? We're going to have to either fund them more, or are they going to get used to doing with less?
Well, right, and certainly as government funding retracts, you know, some of these other funding sources become even more attractive. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the dangers. You know, but as far as keeping prisons full, the drug war itself has done a tremendous job of doing that by criminalizing so many individuals. You know, at the present time, and again, you can go right back and point to the mid-80s and this step up in our efforts to go after drug users, and look at the rise in the prison population in this country. We have a larger per capita prison population than China, than the country of China. We have less than a quarter of their population. We have four times, you know, we're four times smaller, and yet we incarcerate more people than they do. We have the largest per capita prison population in the world, and half of that federally is drug convictions.
Yeah, it's a shocking statistic any way you slice it. And we're doing everything we can to try to reverse that trend. Lori, I also want to talk a little bit about the interaction between the police and the community, something that, you know, we've seen flare up in all sorts of cities now, Ferguson, Baltimore, you know, all sorts of places. And the effect of the war on drugs in separating the police from the citizens they are supposed to be serving and seeing them rather as an enemy. And speak to that a bit. Have you seen that in your experience, that people are more reticent to trust police? And how has the drug war affected that?
Well, I think people are certainly more reticent to trust the police, particularly in some of the larger departments and communities where there are certainly, you know, those officers who go well too far. And when you see the disproportionate enforcement and incarceration of different pieces of our population, the Black community falls victim to drug conviction very disproportionately to any other population in the country. And I think that can't be overlooked when you look at the genesis of the mistrust between different populations and our police. And the militarization that comes with the war on drugs and the mentality of you being at war, that plays on both sides of the equation. Police become more fearful. And let's face it, the war on drugs or illegal drug use has made for an extremely violent element in terms of the drug cartels themselves. So on one side, you've got a community of lawful people who are fearful of their militarized police department. You have some officers who act well outside their legal authority for all the wrong reasons. But you also have a percentage of police officers who are working in a highly inflamed, dangerous environment. There is no better armed force, I would say, in the United States than illegal drug suppliers. Yeah. They have more resources, better weapons than our police departments do. And I think there's been this sort of arms race between the two, and our private citizens are caught in the middle of that.
Well spoken. Lori Chassie from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. You are a Midwestern suburban woman, and we find when we poll for legalization, women poll behind men in their support. In our remaining 30 seconds, can you tell Midwestern suburban women why we should legalize drugs?
We should legalize drugs to get the supply of drugs out of the hands of illegal drug dealers who are using your children, who are recruiting your children to sell, who are engaging your children in the use, who are causing your children to be criminalized and physically harmed by drug use. If we legalize the product, we take it off the streets, regulate it, put it in clinics, put it in safe distribution environments that cater only to adults, significant regulation, and combine that with an education piece, and we will make your children as safe as we, you know, have made them against tobacco. One of the things I like to point out is there is only one drug that we have been successful in reducing the use among youth, and that is tobacco, and we've done that through regulation and education. And regulation and education will make our children safer, and that's what the suburban women in my neck of the woods need to hear. And that's what women in the city need to hear. If we take the profit margins away or minimize the profit margins from these cartels, that will make every neighborhood safer.
Oh, thank you, Lori Chassie from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. We appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you so much.
All right, when we come back, a radical rant, a message to my Idaho friends on your neighbors having legal weed. Stick around.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, the home of marijuana experts. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
And now, a message from former President George W. Bush to remind the American people of our responsibility in our nation's war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, America, use less drugs. Put down the Prozac, the Vioxx, and the Levitra, and turn to the herb. use less drugs. Our national policy is no longer just say no, it's now just slow down.
You get me too high. I overanalyze. If you've ever been too high, then you can sympathize. You get me too high. And I start to fly if I said some silly thing, and that's the reason why.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs, and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics, Herbie Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical rant.
Aw, yeah. Time to rant a little. This one comes from the Argus Observer, which I think is the newspaper in Ontario, Oregon. Ontario, Oregon is on the far eastern end of the state, on the border with Idaho. It's the end of I-84 in Oregon, 376 miles away from me, if you go down I-84. And it's as you cross the Snake River of Ontario, Oregon, you end up in one of two places, either Fruitland, Oregon, or Payette, or Fruitland, Idaho, excuse me, Fruitland, Idaho, or Payette, Idaho. And Payette County is the county that is right adjacent to Ontario. And this story comes out of Fruitland. And by the way, I used to live in Fruitland, Idaho as a kid. Went to school there, I think, fourth grade. And it's funny, Fruitland, of all places, the major avenue running down Fruitland, Idaho is called Gateway Junction. And at the Gateway Junction, the corner of the Gateway Junction and one of the other major roads was the Gateway Bowl, like bowling alley. And Gateway Bowl was painted bright pink. And across the street, I'm not making this up, was Two Guys TV. Now, it's not, Fruitland didn't have like a major LGBT population that I'm aware of that was, you know, very visible. And I think the local residents didn't even at that time, you know, the 70s, even give it a second thought. But anyway, that's Fruitland, Idaho. Now, Fruitland and Payette and this story, they're talking about how newly legal weed in Oregon means they're seeing so much more marijuana in Idaho. The possession of more than 3 ounces is a felony in Idaho. Less than that's a misdemeanor. And the Fruitland police chief, J.D. Huff, told the city council, quote, "Obviously, we're still going to enforce code, and we're out there doing it every day. We've already seen an increase in pot possession. Our canine units are pulling dope off the street every week." End quote. Wow. All right. Good job there, Sergeant. You're getting the weed off the streets in Fruitland. All right. So local law enforcement officers' biggest concern is clogging up the county jail with nonviolent criminals traveling from Oregon with less than 3 ounces of weed, according to Payette County Sheriff Chad Huff. Interesting how the Fruitland police chief is J.D. Huff and the Payette County Sheriff is Chad Huff. Story doesn't make any of those parenthetical no relation things, so come to your own conclusions. The Sheriff Huff said, quote, "We've talked to judges and prosecutors about limiting the amount of people arrested for marijuana. We might give a citation simply to not overpopulate the jail," end quote. Normally, someone possessing any amount of weed in Payette County would be arrested. Now, officers and deputies can use their discretion when deciding whether to arrest or cite. Now, What I like about this is that, you know, moving it down to just getting a ticket when you're caught with weed in Idaho is monumental. I used to play clubs in Payette County as a long-haired, dope-smoking rock and roll musician. And there were numerous times where, if not for a nice stroke of luck, I would have been sitting in the Payette County jail for having just a doobie for the gig. So this is serious that they're talking about an officer's discretion as to whether or not they'll cite someone or arrest them. And on the other side, Ontario Police Chief Mark Alexander, there's no huff apparently in Ontario, said, quote, "We know people are going to attempt to take marijuana into Idaho where they may be legal in Oregon. We will work with the Idaho authorities and let them know if there's violations coming into their state." Okay, so now the Ontario police in the legal side of the state are going to report people who are doing something legal in their state to the authorities across the border if they think they've got weed on them. How does that work? Because the way our marijuana legalization has proceeded here in the state is that the eastern counties can ban marijuana commerce just through their city council. And that includes medical marijuana. So people aren't necessarily going to have a place in eastern Oregon to shop. How are they going to go shopping in eastern Oregon and then bring it across the border? All they could be doing is growing their own and then maybe going across the border, because the counties can't ban your own four-plant home grow. So is this system in the Ontario Police Department, is this their protocol now? Is it going to be to keep track of who they think might have home grows and to test whether and to see whether or not they cross the border, which happens all the time? People go across that Idaho-Oregon border all the time for shopping and other stuff. Man, I don't know. This is a little difficult to get my mind around. But what are you going to do, Idaho? This is the same dilemma faced by Kansas and Nebraska, but on a much grander scale. Because the only way out of Washington State or Oregon heading eastbound is through Idaho. You can go around Nebraska or Kansas if you're coming out of Colorado, if you want to. But there's kind of an ocean on one side and another country on the north. The only way back through would be head south in Oregon into California and then across Nevada. Maybe once California and Nevada legalize, that's what people will be doing. There's a 479-mile border that stretches from the Canadian border on the northeastern tip of Washington State to the southeastern tip of Oregon State. 479-mile border there. What, are you going to build a wall? Let's build a Great Wall. That always works out pretty good. The Great Wall of Idaho to keep all the pot zombies out in search of strains. No, the realistic effect, the practical effect of living next door to the world's only legal marijuana region, two states with a shared border that are both legal. The only possible thing that can result from this is more sensible marijuana laws in Idaho. They're not going to be able to afford it. And continuing to pull people over who make the trip from Boise back to be able to get some weed is not going to work out so well for them. It's going to increase their costs, and people are going to be wondering, why are we paying all this money to bust people for weed? See, one of the arguments that always works so well in these red states when it comes to marijuana prohibition is, well, we don't really arrest that many people for marijuana. It's not really our priority. When we do arrest them, it's usually for something else. We usually catch it, and then marijuana is just part of it. Well, that argument goes up in smoke if you're starting to bust all these cars coming across the Snake River border there from Ontario, going back into the Boise-Nampa-Caldwell Metroplex. That argument goes in smoke once people know, hey, I know a guy who got busted. Yeah, I heard of it. I know a guy too. I know a guy one. That argument starts to go up in smoke. People won't buy it anymore. And they'll start to ask, why are we wasting all this money? Why don't we just give them a ticket? So to my friends in Idaho, who are always trying to propose a medical marijuana law, I would say propose a decriminalization law instead. Let's get decrim in the state of Idaho. The state of Idaho is already pretty resolutely against medical marijuana because they just think it's just a sham. They just think it's just people faking pain. They don't believe in it anymore. They don't believe the line anymore. And they'll think, yeah, maybe it helps some people with cancer, but most of the people are just stoners. They believe that now. The governor of Idaho is the only governor in the entire country presented with a CBD-only bill who vetoed it. They can't even get around CBD-only in Idaho. So why keep proposing medical marijuana and beating your head against the wall? Let's go with decrim. Because decrim, you can still frame in that wonderful Idahoan way of we're still punishing the potheads, we're still punishing the hippies. We'll give them a ticket. But you can frame it as we're not wasting our tax money to jail them and feed them and clothe them. And you can prey on that little Idaho thing, you know, redneck, red state thing against the welfare bums that are sucking away all the money. You paint the people busted for weed sitting there in the jail, getting fed, watching TV as welfare bums as they're sucking off the Idaho tax money. And then you can present them a more appealing alternative. We'll still punish them. We'll just make them pay a fine. Make them pay a fine for a small amount of marijuana. The amount of marijuana that you're supposed to legally be able to have in Oregon is an ounce, right? So decriminalize up to an ounce. Recognize that if someone comes across the border with their little bit of marijuana from Oregon, slap them on the wrist, they did something naughty, and make some money off them. This, I think, you could sell in Idaho. You're still punishing the hippies. You're still punishing the stoners. And you're actually helping the good, God-fearing, law-abiding citizens of Idaho by saving their tax money. You can still maintain your penalties for over an ounce. It can still be a misdemeanor. You can still, you know, mess with people's lives and arrest them and harass them and all of that. But give a break to these western Idaho counties, small town sheriffs and such, with jails that really need to be filled with drunks. Like I said, I used to play music in some of these western Idaho counties. And there are some violent, no good drunks who need to be in those jail cells. Let's not waste all that time and energy and tax revenue busting people who are just enjoying a trip back west to the states where it's legal, who might come home, forget they had a joint in their pocket. People that aren't even really trying to bring it back into Idaho. Maybe made a mistake. It'd make a whole lot more sense, and I think politically speaking, it's something that's realistic, something that can pass in deep red Idaho. Hey, it could happen. I'd have never thought Utah would pass a CBD bill and be the first one to do it. So it can happen. Hell, Louisiana's got medical marijuana. We got a state in the South with medical marijuana. Yeah, it's just that Minnesota, New York extract kind of bullshit. No smoking, no plant, but it's Louisiana. We got decrim in Louisiana. If it can happen in Louisiana, it can happen in another L-shaped state. Make it happen, Idaho. That's all the time we got for today, but join us for Hour 2, Poker Talk Radio. If I can talk. I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at radicalruss.com. You take a seat, you plant it, you grow it, you giant, you